Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing the rising military takeovers across Africa and whether military leaders are saviors or opportunists capitalizing on popular discontent to pursue their personal ambitions. I'm joined by a very special guest and friend, Dr. Tapiwa Victor Warikandwa. Dr. Warikandwa holds a PhD in law from the University of Fort Hare in South Africa, and he's also currently adjunct professor at the University of Venda, South Africa, and also senior lecturer at the Department of Law, University of Botswana. Tapiwa, it's a great pleasure to have you join me today, and I look forward to our conversation. So in recent years, I think within the last five, or let's just say within the last 10 years, across Africa, we've witnessed a spate of military regimes. In Sudan, across certain countries in the Sahel, in Gabon, and also in 2017 in Zimbabwe, which is like a palace coup or something. So what do you think is behind this recent resurgence of military coups in Africa?
Michael, thank you for that question. I'd look at it from a perspective of the fact that what we classify as coups are a call for a number of issues which relate to perhaps the economic conditions that are prevailing in societies, which perhaps extend to security concerns that extend within the African context, and also which emanate from what we call the historical context of African societies. If you look closely to the historical context, it does suggest that our independence was defined by military movements. And what people don't necessarily ask and address is whether those particular military movements changed face after independence. And on that basis, then, the critical question to ask is whether it's a question of resurgence of military movements or it was a continuation, but in a different, facet. What am I saying here? I'm simply saying that what you call as your democratic movement, as it were, seems to be premised on the absence of the role and intervention of the military in government. But that is not necessarily the case, because the role or concept of democratization itself came about as a result of military movements. So for me, there is nothing surprising about this. It is just simply a context of African societies redefining themselves from where they left off when they were trying to achieve independence.
Yeah, that is a very good response. And let me take you up from there. Like in my own reading of African states, the development of African states, I look at independence, where you said that the military movements were critical to the fight for independence or the formation of African states. But then we understand that these were colonial militaries, even though they were natives, but they were not. So in my estimation, in my own belief, the military did not fight. African militaries did not fight for independence of Africa. They were fighting for the protection of the colonial regime. So I wanted to clarify if that is what you meant when you said the independence was defined by military movement. So does that cover, you agree that the military didn't necessarily fight, or what can you just clarify what you mean by that? Go on, I can hear you.
Yes. So let's look at what we call militarization, Michael. I think there's a Western...
Go on.
I think there's a lag time. So I just wanted us to start from looking at what we conceptualize as militarization. Is it a Western concept that is defined, for example, in public international law discourses? Or is it a question of a movement that is defined by a desire to... different regimes of the military context. You had the Western context, which obviously African countries wanted to fight against, which was sort of like propping up power at the time, and in this case, colonial power. But it was a military regime. But at the same time, on the other hand, you had these pro-independence movements, which, of course, were defined again by the existence of use of, military organizations, as it were. So you have to extend existing military centers in this particular context. But then the one that we now are more concerned with is the one that tries to give independence, as it were. And of course, there's a different agenda from the Eurocentric one. The Eurocentric one wants to sustain a hold on power in order to perpetuate the exploitation of natural resources, to continuously benefit from these entities that are under its control. But on the other hand, you now have these systems. If I may give an example of the Southern Africa community where we had in Tanzania the Magomero Institution, political systems that were established but underpinned by military organizations that sought to achieve independence in the respective Southern African countries. So in that context, you have got two centers of militarization. Now, having said that, these centers of militarization that we talk about worked towards achieving independence. And when they achieved independence, they came about in the form of ruling parties, all right? So which means they then swap, because at that time we assume there is a concept of demilitarization, and which again I'll put in quotes. So they continued, they were military movements, but which put on a civilian context and continued as such. But now what has prompted them now to rear back to the military mode is the fact that what they thought perhaps they would achieve with their independence is not practically being realized. And therefore they have to take an aggressive stance to fight. For what reason? Because we now have again the same Western forces using insurgent groups, which are organized also on a military mode to fight and remove these so-called liberation movements, as it were. So from that perspective, you now understand that the concept of militarization and military movements is not as a straight jacket concept as we look at it from an African context, but is subsumed in pockets of military entities which seem to want to achieve or assume control because of different factors or variables at any given point in time.
I agree with you 100% that it's not a straitjacket explanation for a relationship between militarization and all of that. But let's stay at the colonial and post-colonial. Let's not even go to pre-colonial, because you can, if you're saying that the whole foundation of the African state formation is one that is underpinned by militarization, and let's start from that premise, and then. And then link it up to colonialism, link it up to colonial powers, and see how. So would we say, if you look at the military rulers in Africa in the Cold War era, and look at it now, in this era where there seems to be a distanciation from those colonial powers. So could you say that there's a difference? Could you say now the military, because he said now they're taking an aggressive stance, could you also say that they are trying to claw back power or create an identity that is different from that relationship to the former colonial powers, which would be like European countries, like we've seen where France has been booted out from the Sahel, another Francophone state. So would you say this particular resurgence or reemergence of military is different in this sense?
Well, I would have to explain it carefully, Michael. Again, it's not a straightforward response as you would expect. So, well, let's start with the most favorable one, which we have seen, of course, in the Sahel region, particularly centering around the role of Traoré, the celebrated African son, as at present, of course, who seems to be extending a very notable development, which, in my view, seems to force us to rethink what we classify as military movements and even coup d'etats. So in this instance, yes, this is actually a movement which seems to suggest that the traditional forms of what we call democratization post-independence have failed to achieve the objectives that Africans want. And so on that basis, where the so-called traditional governments are not giving the results intended, then we have, people coming together through military entities, as would have been seen, or within the structures of the existent military components, to come up to try to realize constitutional objectives and give people the best results for a number of factors. For example, when you look at, Burkina Faso, Niger, Mali, the argumentation that the Western powers have been exploiting resources at the expense of, indigents. So on that basis, one would not rely on the democratic processes because they themselves are tailor-made and largely Eurocentric and are tailor-made to retain power for certain elements who hold power on their behalf. So on that basis, one would say, yes, the military context in this regard then comes in as an instrumentation of trying to reasset African people's authority within their own domain. However, Michael, and this is where we have to be very careful, we then have another component of the same, sort of like military movement. And I give a classical example of what is happening in the Democratic Republic of Congo, for example. Congo, well known for its mineral endowment, but always known to be in a state of instability. And why is that the case? Because you always have sponsored military movements or insurgency groups or even infiltration within the existing military systems so that, certain external powers have access to natural resources in the country. And you know always that when there is this instability, that's when resource plunder is its highest peak. So you need to look at that element as well. Then I also want to move to another element still. So this particular element that I just explained relates to the perpetuation of what we call neoliberalist ideology or agenda, but using the military as a vehicle, as it were. So the military is controlled by external actors, destabilizes in order to retain much value. Then there is another silent component of militarization, so which again does not seem to suggest an accession of the rights and interests of the African people. The mere presence of Western or Asian military entities or formations within African countries. So you have bases that are set up, and which bases sometimes even undermine the military institutions that are extant in these African countries. I will not want to give express examples now, but I think it's surprising to say they are these, and they interfere with the processes, democratic processes in those respective countries. It's important to note, and these have got nothing to do with asserting control of power within African countries, but they are meant to assert the power or authority of external entities who want to continue benefiting from these African countries. So that's important to note. I see three regimes.
I will come to Traoré in a minute. But again, I understand the profound, how am I going to put it? Not even divine, not even hidden hands. You say that it's quite obvious, hands of external powers in Africa. But then again, we also have to be very careful. So I wanted to go in too much externalization of the African problem, because if you look at it, the drive to take back power, like we see with these military rulers with Traoré and all of that. But then again, you could make the case that in doing that, they are turning towards what you say, non-traditional colonial powers like Russia, like China, like you have all the middle powers as well. So help me make sense of that in terms of, like, I know definitely you need to interact. We live in an international world where you need to interact. But again, is it not the same as changing one master for another master?
Exactly. Michael, let me explain this. It's a good question that you have asked, Dee. And I'll give classical examples. So let's look at the Russian example, as it were. And the critical question is, when these entities come, whether to assist African countries in their advancing, apparently, technology in terms of military equipment and training, etc. And of course, what is their interest? Are they simply just coming out of generosity in order to try to advance the agenda of the African people? Or they are coming in order to get something in return? And so that's critical for us to look at. Russia's presence on the continent, of course, is to look for some returns. And here I give the formulation of the third scramble for Africa, Michael, and I'd be unapologetic in saying so. We simply are moving away from the Western-driven, as it were, colonization of Africa, but coming out to another outfit that is defined by the so-called all-weather friends, but who have clandestine agendas. And from Russia, I could even move to China with its Belt and Road construction. China with a noted or recorded, human rights records, which is atrocious on the continent, but still benefiting much from the same process. So in my view, I don't see any instance where one could argue that such activities as you would associate with, Asia and any other continents are any different from what we have seen. But this is just a part of the new global movement where, of course, anyone who wants to assert control must naturally be seen to having a military control or force or power over any particular subjects that it controls. So for me, this is actually a third scramble for Africa masquerading around militarization, technological.
I agree with you 100%. And that puts the African continent at a double double victimization, double drop and double victimization. But again, we've seen alongside that we're seeing young people. Africa has like the youngest population, so you're seeing teeming youth population that are far removed from colonial narratives. So we've seen in Botswana where you are now. We've seen where the old guards have been booted out, where the old part has always been, we've seen Zimbabwe as well, where you come from, where these parties were more rolled on the anti-colonial and, independent kind of party. We've seen Mozambique. We've seen these things where young youths are like, we don't know about this narrative. We just know we don't have opportunities. There's masters, and then it's leading to... But then again, where I'm going to is this. Are the youth in Africa with this kind of political consciousness and this protest, are they making a mistake of trusting the military? Like I now use Traoré as the poster child for that, as the savior, Is that a wrong? Anyways, you understand what I'm trying to say with that?
I do. Look, Michael, we have to come from this particular understanding. And I want to start from where you say that, there is this ignorance of history. And for me, I will not condone that, especially amongst the youths, because that's where then the exploitation and manipulation comes in. For them to understand the significance of these military movements that we are talking about, they must have an understanding of how our countries have developed and evolved over time from a military context, and to understand who the role players have been and what the agendas have been. And as such, now, when you then want to move into a role of any military activity at any given point in time, you'll then be able to measure their intention. Of course, the youths are largely, to jump on any particular issue with the so-called, I'm not interested in, the historical narrative context, which I think is ill-advised because of a number of factors. One, they would be disappointed with the democratic movement, which is largely Eurocentric. But again, the question is, whose problem is that? The answer is found in history. Africa has never had an occasion of formulating its own democratic system. And in that particular context, this is where we now see the Traorés coming in to say, our democracy is not underpinned by procedures and processes, but it is defined by action. Why are people celebrating Traoré? He has come to do. He has come to stop that which, of course, has been seen to be done. And therefore, for him, it's not about paper trail. It's not about, persistent discourses, debates in parliaments. It's about delivering. And that's why you probably find the youths will jump onto that. But still, you have to be careful. You have just given me the example of Botswana in terms of what you saw, the so-called progressive, element and all that. But the critical question is, when we see that so-called democracy, who underpins the same? And this is what we have been reluctant to address from an African context. Let's understand who the role players are before we conclude that this is a progressive element, it's a so-called miracle democracy, etc. There's a lot that happens, and some of those things, for security reasons, we can't be seen to be, peddling such information on such platforms. But obviously, there are always third hands which guide towards a supposed narrative, and of course, which buys into the youths who are non-critical and who would think that, this is the best form of democracy that we would want to look at. I beg to differ.
There's something you said. You said a couple of things, but let me start with this one. So, which of all is said, even in my last book, I said it that the Africanists that took over, they couldn't wait for the colonial masters to go to then, take on their position and continue, and then perfected that policy of oppression. But now, one thing you Wolf said, and one thing I think that I want to ask you is, like the Traoré. So Traoré came in through a military force, but we can also counterpose that with what happened in Senegal with Faye's presidency, the youngest president. So can we say that the attraction is not simply just forgetting that or forgoing that Eurocentric democratic process? Is it just the youth? Is it just that we're seeing someone that is young? That is it a kick against the old guard, the authoritarian leaders that have the Ali Bongos, the Paul Bias, the Paul Kagames, the people that will feel like they are complicit in the Western Eurocentric hold or grip hold on the continent? Do you see that? Do you see that perspective?
Yes. In fact, Michael, I think with that observation, you hit the nail on the head. And why? I'll explain it in this sense. So when we look at the military movements that we see, post-independence, and we saw, people who naturally sought to achieve so-called best interest of Africans coming into power, but with hidden ulterior motives, and I would not want to polarize and give specific examples as well, but we saw that some of those people came simply to actually benefit from the process and in return for something. And I'll give a conceptualization of that in the sense that what we call, say, governance, or what we call a government now in the contemporary society, is perhaps in development studies, an entity that holds power in return for certain benefits from certain interests. So they are protected in order to achieve that. And what we then see now with the Traoré movement is breaking away from that crop of African leaders who are put in power simply to retain something, but holding interests of external entities. So that external influence is what, you know, the contemporary, not just youths, but even adult Africans are celebrating about Traoré and, you know, his contemporary in Senegal, because they then see a departure from that tradition of saying we get into power because we want the things that are associated. We use the military in order to get the things. They use the military as a vehicle for achieving constitutional objectives and imperatives. And which then prompts me, Michael, to then argue as follows, that perhaps we need to change the language of, militarization and democracy on the continent insofar as military interventions are concerned. I don't think all military interventions must be classified as coup d'etat. No, in the nomenclature of public international law, etc. For me, there must be a new formulative construction from the legal framework which recognizes what people like Traoré have done. That is to say, they have come, yes, using military power, but with an objective to address genuine societal concerns. And so on that basis, that cannot be classified as a coup outright, because it's seeking genuine constitutional outcomes. Then, of course, we distinguish from the coup d'etat that we saw from the Ali Bongos and etc., which just seems to want to get into power for me and my family alone. I think we have to draw a distinction there.
I do agree with you, and that is why in the volume that we are working on currently, I've looked at rethinking the I've titled rethinking the selection or election of political leaders in Africa, because we need to rethink that. So I agree with you on that note. But then again, I wouldn't go as far as, but I don't think I'll go as far as endorsing that process or the pathway to be a military intervention. But what I'm thinking you're saying, what I'm getting is Africa needs to find a way of not only electing our leaders, but also safeguarding. Because so when the elected leaders, because like you mentioned when you first started, you mentioned the conditions that necessitate or that these military coup leaders use to not necessarily manipulate, but you know, these conditions are there. They're valid reasons for such intervention. You talked about economic conditions, you talked about security concerns. So I think what you're saying, what I'm getting is there needs to be an institution that protects and safeguards when our leaders have aid and are not doing that. So you are currently, it seems to be the military, but can there not be another alternative that is not the military? And what would that be if there is?
Michael, let's be realistic, and I'll cut straight to the chase here. So this is where we have heard the so-called democratic processes, which are defined in the constitutions. And obviously, you have processes such as impeachment, which already are extant. If people don't perhaps believe a leader is serving their best interests, then they will go back and follow the constitutional processes, etc. But remember, some of these processes cannot easily be realized unless if there is a military element that props up or endorses otherwise that process. So you can't have it in a democratic process defined by a paper document that you simply call a constitution. No, Michael. The reason why there is a resurgency, at least in military coups, is the belief that coup movements are going to achieve results, because the democratic process is laden with, sissy boys who can't do anything And therefore, they would trust on military force to achieve those deliverables and objectives. And with the evidence that we have seen in the Sahel region, nobody could doubt that. And in fact, let me tell you recently, a recent remark that was made by Duma Boko, the recently appointed president of Botswana, where he said, Africa needs to come up with a new form of democracy. The democracy that is defined by what we then see in terms of perhaps people like Paul Kagame, people like Traore, where what they say is the word and it allows for processes to be done. But when you look at the Eurocentric notion of democracy that you talk about, you have an issue, you debate it in parliament, you want to remove a person who's not delivering in from power. Of course, they must follow a certain processes, etc. And that prolongs the suffering of people. So I don't see anything outside of these military movements, which is why I'm tempted, Michael, and robustly so, to contend that we now need to distinguish between what we call a generic coup and a military intervention that is tailor-made to achieve tangible results for society.
I think
the military is regarded as producing tangible results as opposed to the extant democratic processes.
Okay, I'll come to that question and see where, if we look at the history of military interventions in Africa and see whether we have precedents to justify that position that the military have been very effective. But the question I want to ask is this. If we go pre-colonial times, Africa was actually very democratic. This is documented. And so if I look at the Igbos, even the Yorubas in Nigeria, which I'm aware for, they had an enlightened populace at different groups that debated that do that. So when you're saying, I'm just looking at the danger of, because power or absolute power corrupts, it doesn't matter if it's liberal democracy or African democracy. Yeah. And there should be due process. And you're a lawyer, so you can't say we want to cut out red tape, so we want swift justice. So what happens is you could have like a mob or one man justice that then truncates the fair and cautious, considerable looking at all the evidence to come through. So now if we look at that, my question then is, you mentioned the African populace. You mentioned the youths that are ill-advised. You mentioned the youths that are ill-advised and ignorance of the historical stuff. Do you think that, again, we focus too much on the leaders and not looking at the populace in Africa's, that there has been this deliberate policy to make them ignorant? Look at educational systems. Look at all those systems that would have done that. What are they, in a way? Sometimes I listen to Fela, one of the social whatever singer in Africa, late Fela, would say he describes Nigerians of Africa as suffering and smiling. So what that means is you're endorsing that. But does that also mean that there's a bad politics that keeps the populace in Africa in that way? And if that's the case, what is the way forward? Shouldn't that be where we should concentrate rather than concentrating on strong men to lead us forward?
Good question, Michael. But I want to start from where you started. Yes, I'm a lawyer. And yes, well, there is what we call legality and there are what we call legal rules. But what I want to quickly remind you of is this. Number one, what we call the law, what we call the common law in Africa is not common to us. We have never really developed laws based on our own value systems. And yes, you correctly note the pre-colonial era, well, had its own military systems, but they were governed within the framework of humaneness, Ubuntu, Michael. And that's what defined. Those were our value systems. That was defined in our customary law. So our law has not developed much as to define what we want in terms of militarization from an Afrocentric context. And that's why I was telling you that our democracy is not related to us. It's relating to other people who want to achieve something. So which then moves, it leads me to get to the youth to say, yes, you don't blame them. They are not properly educated because the education that we have is imported. It's westernized. We have been in control of it. Who controls what we feed and consume is theoretical formulations of education of the law. So, Michael, this is the extant problem that we have in Africa. What we think relates to our understanding or conceptualization of democracy and militarization is imported. It's alien to us. It doesn't resonate with our thinking. So you can't argue to say, the youth, by all accounts, have a proper understanding or formulation of what ought to be militarized, usage of, democratic processes and transitions, etc. It's all imported. My question, therefore, would thus be, the good thing is I'm also a university educator. And I'll tell you, the proportion of what we teach these students has got nothing to do with Afrocentrism. No. And that's why we can't obtain African solutions to African problems. And for that reason, that's why you find people like Duma Boko, the president of Namibia, the lady who has just come in, and of course the Traores now come in and become unique because they are now driving a particular thought process. Not this Prussian system of education that we have, which prompts dumbing down and non-critical mass. People who just follow without understanding what is happening. So that is where my problem is. What you call the pre-colonial really was defined by value systems which were relational to the African people. What you call African in the post-colonial era is some entity that is controlled by value systems which are imported, a character of social engineering that does not relate and understand its own interests. And therefore, that's why, Michael, I must then emphasize why this process of the contemporary military movements characterized by Traore is assuming ascendancy, because they seem to be coming in with a new form or context of democracy, which aligns with the leadership trajectory of the pre-colonial dispensation. What a king would say would carry the day, and decisions were faster. Where you move on, you then say, you are a lawyer, but I'm a lawyer trained on, Western values, Western common law. I call my Roman Dutch law as my common law, Michael. And that's unusual. So you can't call me a person who is connected with the Afrocentric context. But if I were to tell you that we need, a military and democratic system defined by Ubuntu, then you call me an African lawyer and say, I am relevant to the context.
That is good. I like that. To be honest with you, I don't disagree much to you. And like I said, we all know that in Africa, and a lot of these kingmakers, even the military, I've interviewed militaries that have, external people that have admitted how they've imposed so-called democratic leaders. So if we're going to be imposing and the elections mean nothing, and after elections mean nothing, we're better finding a system that works for us. So since we've already started talking in that, but again, what is so dynamic in the African continent so far is we're seeing it happening in, whereas we see the old guard still consolidating in certain places. We're seeing, like we're seeing the case of Namibia, which is still under the democratic system. In Botswana, we're seeing in Senegal, but again, we're seeing military leaders like Traore, and then we see all of that converging with the same unifying theme, even though they've come into power through different means. So that does say that there is that appetite or desire for change. So in that note, if I ask the concluding question, just take a broad look and say, what is the long term? How do you see this wave that we're currently on? Do you see it yielding something positive in the long term? Do you see it dying down? What do you see? How do you, just as a final question, just, take the liberty and just, provide a summary.
Michael, a number of permutations will come in with respect to your question. Let me start here. for me, what this movement has brought about, especially to the extent that it is capable of maintaining constitutional aspirations of societies, African societies, is that we will now see an increased role, not that there wasn't any, but an increased role of the place of the military in the context or institutions of governance. Look, I've clearly said this. They seem to be, from the traditional Western parlance, that you have to keep the military out of democratic processes and governance, and that they only come in instances of emergencies, etc. But my general understanding is that whether people like it or not, the military still has a key role to play in terms of democracy, at least on the continent. But the only question that we then have to ask is, what agenda would they be driving? But in the current movement, the agenda that has been driven is, let's take Africa back to the people. And on that basis, there would be a lot of trust of the role and place of the military in African governance, as it were. And of course, which then allows us to embed them in the democratic processes, and which also allows us to even look at parliamentary oversight of the role, place, and the presence of the military in general day-to-day governance, which is critical. However, there's a cautionary remark that I would have to put here. If, as we have seen with the multiple attempts that have been made on a person like Traoré, for example, if something were to give under that circumstance, I think this would actually be the point of a greater failing of a movement or initiative that I think would have given much traction and redefined militarization, democracy, and constitutionalism on the continent. Why am I saying this? Because so far, the attitude towards the military has always been that it is an entity that comes in to destabilize, interfere with the general traditional forms of governance, as at least as we have understood them to be. But for once, you know, the military has been trusted as an entity that can actually allow for a progressive growth and development of the nation. Look at you know, the initiatives that have been put in place, Mali, Niger, you know, Senegal, quite drastic within a short period of time. They've achieved deliverables which the traditional leaders in Africa have failed over years. So in this sense, if we move towards this trajectory, I foresee that Africa will come up with a new system of democracy that is premised by a genuine military base. But if it fails, well, then we'll descend into even more chaotic, you know, cycle of persistent coups which achieve nothing but perennial suffering and resource plunder for the continent. So I think, in my view, we need to come up with a principled approach. You wouldn't agree with me on the notion of trying to sanitize or coming up with a mechanism of sanitized acknowledgement of certain movements which are, you know, premised on the military. But I'll tell you, the transition, if this builds on, just like any law which assumes force because of repeated usage over time, we are going to have to deal with this as lawyers to try to come up with a mechanism of distinguishing between a generic coup and a military intervention that is premised on constitutional aspirations. Yes.
I agree with you, and I share. Go on. I think you have to start
some this.
Fine. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. We are at a very critical point where, like, to use the word, lack of better words, a make or mar situation, where if this works, it could galvanize the kind of like long-term change that is possible. So it's like a wave that people can ride on to then demand a change. But for me, the way I see it is, it does speak to the need, the people's genuine yearning for a system that works. And at this point in time, like you rightly said, there is that trust, renewed trust in the military system, which is usually one you don't see.
And you don't get,
We don't get. So I do share with you that. And then again, I think that also, and also on the note of the external influence and the kind of system that we practice. We know that has been alien to us and is a system that needs to be looked into. And that's why, again, we start looking into the volume as well to see if there's a possibility and what that will look like, the an African-styled democracy. But anyways, it's been a
remark, Michael, with a cautionary remark also that how we deal with the thought process, the theoretical constructs and formulations must not necessarily be driven by Western theoretical constructs, because if that happens, it's a futile exercise. We'll tend to sanitize certain formulations of military interventions as being reviled against the dictates of democratic processes, etc. But of course, I'm not naive to recognize that what we have seen with the traditional African leaders is their use of coups through manipulative processes of arguing that they want to bring better to the people where they cannot bring anything better. So that's why I'm saying we really need to come up with something that is scientific, informed by contemporary developments, and not just simply reproduction and regurgitation of information that does not take Africa anyway. So it's important to look.
I agree with you 100%, and I look forward to that time when the continent enjoys that. Anyways, Tapua, thank you very much for your time and for your very, very rich views and insight into this topic. And and I'm sure the listeners and viewers, we really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed it. And I'll be in touch shortly regarding the other things that we did speak about.
Yes, Michael. Thank you. All the best. And thank you for this time. Blessings to
Africa. Thank you very much.
All right.
Amen. Amen to that. All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Bye then.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in today. Join me as usual as you thank our guest, Dr. Tapiwa Victor Warekandwa, who has provided a very interesting perspective on the rising influence of military rulers in Africa and what implication that holds for the future of the continent. For now, stay blessed, and I'll see you next week.